We're in our series of Habakkuk, and Naomi's just read out a passage there from Habakkuk in chapter 1, the end of chapter 1. And when I looked at this passage this week, I thought my first reaction was, oh no, this is going to be a tough passage to preach on. And so it's proved in my preparation. It's been a real struggle to get there. And so today we're grabbing different things, a few different pieces, and we're going to pull them all together, and we're going to explore what it is when we respond to or need to navigate an injustice, either an injustice that we see or an injustice that we experience. And as part of my introduction today, I'm going to interview two different people. And the first person I'm going to interview is Dave Gellis. So Dave, where are you? Here he is, right down the front. Dave, if you can come up. Dave is, tell us, what are you up to on Cup Weekend, next weekend?
All of a sudden, it's next weekend, not very far away. Going to do a quick road trip, blitz trip up to Dayton, just the other side of the river from Mildura. And just to go up on Sunday and Monday and participate in the youth drop-in garage, as we call it, which Ilka runs. And so it'll just be, he just gathers kids, Aboriginal kids, from out at the Namajira community and brings them in, and they just muck around for hours. And it'll just be playing pool, billiards, it'll be playing table tennis, it'll be playing PlayStation, it'll just be being there as much as anything else.
So you get to do a whole lot of fun things by the sound of it, or at least perhaps fun for the kids. And but we've been partnering with the Sunraysia Indigenous Ministries for a little while. Give us, I guess, a bit of an update around what they're up to. This is your second visit this year. What have you observed in the time that we've been partnering with them?
They sort of have two aspects to their ministry. So one is the drop-in centre, which Ilka is a very big part of. And they also, in parallel with that, have an Indigenous church. And an Indigenous pastor who is leading that church. We haven't actually crossed paths with him, so I'm not too sure about.
Maybe this weekend we'll see.
Yep. Yes, yep. But hopefully this weekend.
Yeah, yeah. If people wanted to join you, what do they need to do?
Be ready to drive. just let me know, or Nikki know. We're planning to, so the drop-in garage will be running Sunday afternoon, 12 o'clock through to 4 o'clock. And then again on our Cup Monday, which is just, I think, 4 till 6. Our plan is actually just to drive up Sunday morning and then drive back Monday night. So we're only away for the one night.
Right, great. And I guess a more general question. I'm going to ask a similar question of Chris when I interview him as well. And given the theme that we're exploring today around injustice, what are some of the things that you've observed that are areas of injustice in terms of what Indigenous people, especially Indigenous young people, are facing up there in Dayton?
It's a pretty big question. And I guess acknowledging this week, Friday, the closure of the climb at Uluru is a very big piece of symbology. Something very symbolic in the context of understanding the injustice to Indigenous in Australia. And it's very powerful having Ned here today in that context. As I'm sure everybody has done, we've all pre-read Habakkuk in anticipation of Paul's messages.
Anyone else done that? No, just kidding.
And in doing that, 2 weeks ago when you started, I read this verse, which is chapter 2, verse 12. This is pretty hard in the context of injustice for Indigenous. And I suppose it's my emotional response to it is a reflection of my journey and my sense of revelation around where this sits, and each of us, you know, God does that to each of us over time. This is verse 12, and the note I've written down next to it is Australia. Woe to him who builds a town with blood and founds a city on iniquity. And that's the European history of Australia. And that's what I guess I see as the intergenerational injustice that we see at Dayton, is young kids, kids who are primary school, trying to understand who they are in the context of having lost so much. And while European society has brought so much, it has taken so much.
Yeah. Yeah.
And trying to reconcile that, which is our ministry in Christ, is, I guess, my response to that sense of injustice.
Terrific. Thank you, Dave. And if you would like to join Dave next weekend, it's just a 24-hour or so trip next Sunday and Monday, please go and see Dave or Nikki after the service. Chris, if you'd like to come and join me. Chris, come and join me, mate. We welcomed Chris and Jody into the membership of this church around about 6 months ago, and we did it via a Zoom video link. If you were here, you might remember it. Chris and Jody and the work of Second Chance in Thailand, in Bangkok, particularly in the Klong Toei slum of Bangkok, is a work that we as a church are partnering with you guys in as well. But it's great to have you here in person, the first time in person as a member of this church. I'm not sure whether that really means much at all, but it's great to have you here anyway. Tell us, why are you in Australia?
Yeah, thanks for the welcome, and it's truly a joy to be here. And yeah, it's for us, normally it's on the screen, 6:30 in the morning over there a Sunday morning, so it is actually nice to be here in person. Jodie sends her warm regards also. We're here for a family wedding.
Right.
Yeah.
Awesome. How are things going in Klong Toei? Give us a little bit of an update since we last spoke to you, which was only about a month or two ago. But yeah, where are things at with Second Chance and how are they going generally?
Yeah, look, Second Chance is it's a business that runs itself in many ways, except I guess Jade and I have a particular... our role is really to just shape and form a culture within that place that honours God, that helps people recognise their value and their worth, and that they themselves are made in the image of God. And I suppose whenever we attempt to speak truth and live out God's kingdom, there's always pushback and some of the issues that are real every day of struggles with mental illness and just the wrestles of day-to-day life. But people living in a slum, the reality is survival. And so working with people who can really just focus on day-to-day becomes, there's challenges with that.
Yeah. I should have actually introduced you better than what I did, I just realised, because we've got a whole lot of people here today that are either new to the church or visiting. And so just for those people to fill in the gaps, because you're probably wondering what the heck's going on here. But
you're going back how many years?
Oh, well, probably... 40-odd not 40-odd, no.
They don't do that.
So Chris and I grew up together, funnily enough, and I'm 2 years older than him, although I look probably 20 years younger. But apart from that, I am actually older than him. And we grew up together. We were really good mates, along with Chris's brother, Andy, and the three of us were really tight growing up. And we hung out as teenagers into our young adult years. And we went on different journeys. Andy's a teacher. Married, three kids, doing great out in Croydon. And I sort of went on this journey towards ministry and leadership in church, the church world. And Chris and Jody got married, and they went in a very different journey, but still an incredibly God-inspired and filled journey of working and living amongst the poorest of the poor. And that's been happening now for a good 15 years, initially in Springvale. In Kevin Street in Springvale, one of the poorest streets in what was then, probably still is, one of the poorest areas of Melbourne. And then that next step after that was to move into the Klong Toei slum of Bangkok, a slum of about 80,000 people, maybe a little bit more than that now. Roughly the size of the Gisborne Commercial District, if you get a drift of the amount of people that live in that small space. And you've been living and working amongst those the people of Klong Toei in the Romgau neighbourhood for about the last 12 years or so. And in that time, I've established a business called Second Chance, which is an upcycle store So the business itself is an op shop. They sell donated material, but they also use that material to sew into bags and toys and various other things, providing employment directly to 20-odd people and indirectly providing income to many, many others. And so it's an amazing initiative, and it's a privilege for us as a church to actually be partnering with you and to be a part of it in the small way that we are. I guess the other question I want to ask you, or a couple more questions. One is about your daughter, Grace, who's there's a bit of a transition happening in the family there. Tell us a bit about that and how things are going with you and with her as you contemplate.
Yeah. Grace is our oldest daughter. She's 16, and while we're back, we're helping her find her feet here and setting up bank accounts and finding a school and these sorts of things. Grace will move back at the start of next year and live with family in Melbourne and do a final 2 years of schooling. So that's a big shift for her. Obviously, we appreciate your prayers and for Grace and for us. She's obviously, of course, a must love member of our family. Yeah, we'll miss her dearly, but we really sense that God is making the path clear for her in this move. Yeah.
Yep. And we, every Tuesday morning, we have a prayer meeting, and we're praying for you guys. We pray for Grace, and we'll continue doing that. And we encourage you to be praying as well as Grace sort of makes that transition. Now, we're bringing a small team of people over in March of next year to run a community art project and a little youth camp in partnership with you guys. And what can we expect? The people that are going over there, what are we going to see, hear, experience in the week that we're there?
Oh, look, we're just watching this video of the young people on camp. We're pretty much like that, really, just having a great time. Mm-hmm. But there won't be any beach, and there'll be, we'll be in our slum community, which is overcrowded, as Paul said. It'll be hot, but there'll be lots of good times and lots of good food. And working alongside some of the younger people in our community and creating opportunities for them to just broaden their worldview a bit and experience in life and engaging in some activities that we hope will help them to just connect with who they are, connect with who God is.
Right.
God is doing this world. So
yeah, I was actually over there in March of this year, and I don't think I've shared this with you, but Chris said to me, "Oh, do you want to go for a ride, bike ride?" I was there first morning. We had a pretty late night the night before. Arrived in late, and so I got to bed at about 3 or 4 a.m. Australian time with the time difference. Got up the next morning. Chris said, "Oh, let's go for a bike ride around the port area." And at the time, I was pretty fit with my bike riding. I'd been riding up Mount Macedon, so I thought, yeah, let's go for a bike ride and all that sort of stuff. And so you get on the river, you go across the river in these boats, and then you hire a bike, and there's these old I'm used to with the carbon fiber frame or anything like that. It was these heavy big bikes, and we're riding in a perfectly flat area, but in the heat, we rode for about half an hour. I was shattered. It was really hard work. So guys, we're not going doing any bike riding, certainly not on the first day, but it's great. Now, tell us a similar question to what I asked Dave. What are some of the injustices that the residents of Klongtoy experience on a day-to-day basis?
Oh, day to day. Look. A few years back, a famous person, a celebrity, posted on their site. Bangkok is the jewel, in the crown of Thailand, if you like. It's an incredible city. It's a beautiful city. They continue to say that, except it's got this cancer. This tumour that needs to be removed, and that tumour is Klongtoy, and so a celebrity is saying this about the people of Klongtoy, the people of our neighbourhood. They're basically saying they've got no value and no worth and nothing to contribute to the city, and for us, this is an important theme of us as Christians this marred identity that the poor have simply because of where they're born, simply because of where they live. They are told they have no value and no worth and they need to be removed. Now, for Jodie and I, it is, it's pretty clear for us to right this injustice and say, you are people of value, you are people of worth, you are people that Jesus came for, to reconcile to God. And so for us, we see how that is played out day after day after day. When you have a marred identity, you will live from that brokenness. Mm. And so we just open our door to get a glimpse of that brokenness. Mm. As we said, it's house on house. It's congested. It's people. So when brokenness bangs up against brokenness, it gets very messy very quickly. Mm. And so I guess the rewriting or restating and offering an alternative narrative is to say that you are loved, mm. and that you are precious and you have worth. And we're able to do that through Second Chance. We're excited to partner with Lisbon to do that.
Mm. Terrific. Well, thank you. Thank you for being here. And great to see you.
Thank you. Yeah, it's great to be here.
Yeah.
Bless you all.
Thanks, mate. So it's been fortuitous and deliberate that I've been able to interview both Dave and Chris today. Fortuitous in the sense that Dave, and I guess especially Chris, could be here today. And Dave, not that you're not as important as Chris, but you get what I mean in terms of location and distance and all that. But very deliberate too, in that I suspected that there would be something said and shared that speaks directly into the passage that we're looking at today. We don't have to look very far to see injustices in our world, whether that be amongst the first peoples of our land or whether that be amongst some of the poorest of the poor in other nations. And as a follower of Jesus, the fact is that we have to grapple with the fact that injustices occur. When we have our Indigenous brothers and sisters living just a few hours north of us in really desperate situations, when we become aware of people living in poverty in other parts of the world, where the population is so dense and there's brokenness coming up against brokenness, living on just a couple of $100 or less every month. But not only do we need to work out how we respond to when we see injustices, we also need to be able to navigate and respond in faith to the injustices that can occur to us as well. Things happen to us which seem unfair, which don't seem right, which if we look at them, we might just say, that's unjust. Whether it's the loss of a friendship that we valued through no fault of our own, whether it's when we lose our job through to economic downsizing or rationalism or something like that, it's out of our control. Whether our health goes downhill suddenly and we're limited in what we can do, whether it's the loss of a loved one, whatever it is, there will be times when we'll feel distraught and distressed and we'll cry out against the injustice and the unfairness of it all. For Habakkuk, the injustice that he is feeling when he writes these words and that he is trying to understand is one where there are some foreign oppressors coming, the Babylonians, an evil and wicked empire. God's raising them up to be his instrument of judgment against the Israelites, and it's clear to Habakkuk, it's clear to all what is going to happen here. Cities are going to be destroyed. Homes will be left in rubble. There will be a mass loss of life, and those that survive are going to be taken away to a foreign land in captivity and slavery. It's bleak. It's horrible. The situation is desperate. And Habakkuk cries out to God again. And in this prayer he prays, the prayer that Naomi read out earlier, we can actually see that Habakkuk's on a journey of faith here as he contemplates what's going to happen to him and to the Israelites. He's starting to process it. He's starting to try and understand it. And I believe he's moving his way towards actually navigating his way through this injustice as he processes it. And in the time that we have left today, the next 10 minutes, I want to highlight two instructive ways, two ways in which Habakkuk responds to the injustice that's happening to him, that which he sees and that which he knows he's about to experience. The first thing that Habakkuk does is this. He questions God from a place of faith. He questions God, but it's from a place of faith. In verse 13, Habakkuk asks God the question. He says, "Why are you silent while the wicked swallow up those who are more righteous than themselves?" And what Habakkuk is saying here is that, God, I get that you are God. I get that you can pretty much do whatever you like, but why the Babylonians as your instrument of judgment? The wicked and evil people that they are. Now, he's recognizing that the Israelites are a long way off perfect, but he's asking the question, why would you raise up someone even more wicked than us to bring your judgment upon us? It seems, and it is, a legitimate question. And God does, in fact, answer. He answers in chapter 2. If you've got your Bibles open, you can read it if you like. We're going to look at that in the weeks ahead, so it's not going to be my focus today. But for now, it's important that we recognize that it's okay to ask questions of God when we see or we experience injustice. But it's got to come from that place of faith. And this was certainly true of Habakkuk in verse 12 when he's addressing God and he's crying out to God and he's saying, "Why God, why God?" In verse 12 he says, "My God, my Holy One, my rock." 2 weeks ago, when we looked at verses 1 to 5, we saw that Habakkuk was making his first complaint to God, and he was quite angry. He was asking a question. He was raising his fist at God when he was saying, "God, why are you silent?" And he was angry, but this time we see him a little bit different. He's still asking that question, why? But he refers to God as my God. My Holy One, my rock. God, I don't understand it. God, I don't know what's happening here, but I'm hanging on to you, my God. I want to share a photo. It's going to be up on the screen. It's a photo that was actually taken yesterday. Now, the ministry staff of this church and the elders and a couple of other leaders went away on a prayer retreat. And we had a great time. And many of us were able to talk about, as we started out the day, about some of the things that we hope to get out of the day. And there's a lot of conversation around just the busyness of life and the weariness and all of that brings, and how we were looking forward to putting a day aside to just press and lean into God. And Linda Young, who is a member of this church, was guiding us through the day, very experienced in spiritual direction and in running these type of retreats. And at the start of the day, she gave us each a rock. And it was symbolized that God's presence was with us throughout the day. And it was amazing. And one of the comments that Linda made is, because when we picked up the rock, you know, rocks are quite cold. And she says, as the rock sits in your hand, it'll warm up. And the warmth of the rock will be like the presence of God with you all through the day. And sure enough, within 30 seconds to a minute, that rock was warm as I held it in my hand or I held it in my pocket, and it stayed with me all day and stayed really warm. And there was that sense of God's presence with me all throughout the day. And at the end of the day, Fiona suggested it was a good idea, and I'm glad she did. Let's take a photo. So we all had out our hands with the rocks that we held with us each day, symbolizing God's presence that had been with us throughout the whole day. It was a great reminder that God is our rock. No matter what we're facing, whether in times of trouble or whether the times are good, whether there's injustice around us or whether that's justice, whatever it is, we need to keep pressing in. We need to keep leaning into God, our rock. The second thing that we see that Habakkuk is grappling with in terms of the injustice and how he responds to it is that he names and speaks out against the injustice. He names and he speaks out against the injustice. If we can go to that next slide. Habakkuk is starting to understand why God is allowing this injustice occur, but he's not shying away from naming it. He's not shying away from speaking out about it, that which he sees. And in verse 14 to verse 17, we have this amazing description of not just the fallenness and the brokenness of the Babylonians, but it actually can be used to describe each and every one of us. Everyone is susceptible to the temptations of power of prestige, of popularity and prosperity, of taking more than we need, of not having concern for others when we should. And Habakkuk names and he speaks out against two injustices. The first injustice is aggression and greed. The Babylonians are like fishermen, Habakkuk says, fishermen who cast out hooks and lines and nets and trap all the fish they could. See, feeding themselves from the seas is not enough for the Babylonians. They need to subjugate the small and the weak. Their foot had to be on the neck of those that they were oppressing, and wherever they went, their aggression and their greed could be seen in the plunder and the pillage that they took from others, taking for themselves the gold, the jewels, and the wealth of others without any concern. In the small amount of time I've spent with Chris in Klong Toi, one of the things that just stands out is how the residents of Klong Toi are oppressed by people that are aggressive and greedy. The relationship that we have with Second Chance and with the Sunraysia Indigenous Ministries is like a gift for us as a church. It's a gift for us as a church because it gives us a space, albeit a small space, but a space nonetheless where we can speak out, where we can name the injustice and we can do something about it. Not for our own sake, not for our own glory or anything like that, but it just enables us to move into that space, that important space that as followers of Jesus we must be. It's a space where we can pray for others. It's a space where we can actually get involved directly through friendship, through support, through partnership, through coming alongside. The second injustice that Habakkuk speaks out again is the worship of self and things. The worship of self and things. In verse 16, Habakkuk speaks out against the Babylonians, who he describes as like those who exploit the resources of the sea to build up their own wealth. In verse 16, Habakkuk's accusation to the Babylonians is that you live in luxury and you eat the choicest foods without any regard to those who have nothing. The Babylonians are a puffed up people. They're prideful. They're not even going to think twice about trotting on the weak. We see this worship of self and things all around us. We see this worship of self and things in the businessman who grants himself $1 million bonuses while those who work for him get the CPI increase if they're lucky. We see it in the grandstanding current day politician who tells anyone and everyone who will listen to them how powerful and how wise they are. We see it in the sportsman who lets his ego go ahead of his team. We see it in the celebrity who posts yet another revealing selfie of themselves. The worship of self, it's ingrained in our culture. But it's not only the powerful and the famous who are susceptible. It's easy to forget Jesus in our everyday, in the affluence that we live, where we can so easily confuse what we need with what we want. And when that happens, it just seems that Jesus is a little bit further away. I'd like to invite the worship team to come forward. One of the reasons why this is such a hard passage to preach on is because whenever you approach a passage of Scripture, you look for the redemptive theme. Where's the redemption? Where's Jesus in this passage? And it's interesting, I've got a few commentaries on Habakkuk, and one of the commentaries I have on Habakkuk is a commentary that proclaims to say that whatever passage we will commentate on, Jesus will come through. We'll shine Jesus into the passage. And sure enough, when I got to that commentary and I read it, there wasn't one mention of Jesus. Interesting. I used to love wrestling with my dad. And for what seemed like hours, we would wrestle, and it was sort of like our mutual and shared love language. And I could never beat him. My dad was stronger than me, and I could just never beat him. And I got to about the age of 14. I think I was about 14. And finally, I pinned him down, and he couldn't move. It was great. Victory was mine. From that day forward, I would never lose a wrestle again. It was fantastic. And then the next day, I came up to Dad, and I said, "Let's wrestle, Dad." He said, "No, we're never doing that again." What we've been exploring today is a bit like a wrestle. It's that deep water, those deep things of faith that are on the edge and even beyond our own human understandings. Why does God allow injustices to occur? But what we do learn from Habakkuk is that even in the midst of those injustices, there will be God's purposes revealed. When we're faced with injustices, we can be like Habakkuk. We can ask why. Why does God allow horrible things to happen to others and to us? And as we ask that question, we can consider Jesus. And we can consider the wrestle that he had with his own father at Gethsemane. On the night before he died, he knew what was to come. He knew the suffering that he was going to endure. And he knew that it was all part of God's sovereign plan. But on that night, he fell face down in the garden and he prayed out to his father. He said, "Take this cup from me. It's too much. Take this horrible thing away that I know is going to happen, that I know I have to endure. If it is your will, can you please take it away?" You see, in his time of need, Jesus needed to go to the Father. He needed to express his anguish. He needed to express his sorrow over that which is about to happen. But in the greatest ever act of love, Jesus gets off the ground. And from Gethsemane, he goes to Calvary. From the garden to the cross. And so in our time of need, when we experience an injustice, when we see injustices occurring, we can take comfort from the fact that the greatest injustice that has ever been committed was committed against our Lord, against Jesus. He knows. He understands. He is there with us as we endure, bringing his peace, bringing his love, bringing his grace, bringing understanding into that situation. What's really fascinating about this passage of Habakkuk is that if you compare it to the passage we're in 2 weeks ago, verse 1 to 5 compared to verse 12 to 17. In verse 1 to 5, Habakkuk's angry with God. But in this second complaint, we can see him coming to this place of acceptance. He is saying, no matter what may come, God, no matter what is on its way for me and for the Israelites, I'm hanging on to you, my God, my Holy One, my Rock. May we also be like Habakkuk. May we also be able to say, no matter what, no matter what is coming at us, no matter what injustice we might see or experience, may we also say, my God, my Holy One, my Rock. Will you stand with me now? A couple of weeks ago, was the 15-year anniversary of Kate's brother's passing. Probably the most horrible, no doubt, horrible moment that we've experienced and horrible season of time that we experienced. Passed away at the age of 27. And we were asking these deep questions. Why, God? Why? And I can remember next week, he died on a Sunday, and the next week I was in church. The first song that was offered as a song for us to sing is the song that we're going to sing now. It's a song called Blessed Be Your Name. It was like God was saying to me at that moment, hang on. Hang on. No matter what, no matter how unfair you think it is, no matter how much this doesn't seem to be right, hang on to me. Let's all sing together. Blessed be your name. As we close our morning this morning, I want to pray And I also want to invite you, if you would like prayer, and maybe there's something that's been stirred up today, an experience you're observing or an experience you're having, and you just want someone to come alongside you and pray with you and to pray for God's peace, for God's endurance, for his understanding in the midst of that season that you're right in. And if that's you, as we close our service, please come forward, and there's people that would love to come alongside you and to pray with you and for you. When you're challenged by a passage where there seems to be little redemption, you have to finish. You have to come to that which we have for our future, the future hope that we have, where all that is wrong in this world will one day be made right, where there'll be no more mourning, where there'll be no more crying, there'll be no more tears. We leave today with a sadness because there is injustice, but we leave with hope in our hearts, because we know Jesus and we know what he has for us, both in this life and forevermore. Thank you for coming this morning. Please stay around for a coffee. If you'd like prayer, please come forward. May God bless you as you go.